If you have a broken guitar, don't fret. Take the scenic drive to Fort Atkinson to Jeff's Guitar Clinic. We'll have you fretting your guitar in no time at all. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic, we love guitars.
I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep Sly'sOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date. Whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from Sly'sOffice.com.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Welcome to another podcast at Sly'sOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and many great local sponsors like Madison Computer Works, S&R Remodeling, AMS, and the Axley Law Firm. Joining us now, former U.S. Senator and State Senator Russ Feingold. Senator, thanks for coming on the show.
Good to be in the podcast. Thank you, Sly.
All right. So I've had so many people ask me what is legit action that I thought I'd give you an opportunity to give people that haven't checked out your website and what you're doing kind of a broad overview, and then we'll get into the some of the specifics of what it's all about.
Well, we launched this advocacy group in March after watching the debacle of the November election and everything that was already happening by March. And it's based on the word legitimacy. Legit action is essentially saying this. As awful as Donald Trump is, as frightening as what he does almost every day, including especially the last few days, we can't forget that a number of things that have been done to attack the legitimacy of our democratic institutions began long before Donald Trump, and those attacks will continue after him. And we have to keep our eye on the ball. Of course, we have to take on the stuff he's doing. And in some cases, they're very interconnected. But the main things we're looking at here are protecting the right to vote, protecting what is now a very devastated campaign finance system, doing something to change the way we elect our president, the Electoral College issue, and the damage that's been done to the United States Supreme Court. So it's those four institutions that we think are being delegitimized. And it's been a conscious effort by the right in this country, especially the Republican Party, but the right in general, and various billionaires since about 2009, 2010, to undercut things that really, in every one of those cases, were really bipartisan or nonpartisan institutions. These are devastating changes that even a Mitch McConnell would not have proposed in most cases 7 or 8 years ago.
Do you think the money in politics has made it the blood sport that it is, where people sort of lose that sort of civic sense they used to have when they came to office, and that they know they're there for one reason, and that's to carry out the orders of the people writing the checks?
Well, money does talk, and when you start having this kind of unlimited secret contract, it becomes not only more powerful and more scary to people in public life. It's not only that. I mean, the appeals to racism and hatred and division are there even independent of the money issue. But when the two of them come together, as they're doing right now, yes, people start saying, well, you know, in the past, we've always given a president the opportunity to have a vote on a Supreme Court nominee. You know, people wouldn't have considered doing what they did to Merrick Garland and President Obama. But when people are terrified about money and about making sure that their hardcore base won't cut them off, they start forgetting those traditions and mores and norms, if you will, that have helped us from coming apart at the seams. And obviously, all of us fear that's exactly what's happening now, and it's those influences as well as others that are enabling it.
When people... And you were unusually clear. You're always clear, but you were unusually extra clear about your feeling that the Gorsuch nomination shouldn't have happened, that you would have voted no, that it was that it wasn't legitimate because of what the Republicans had done. I'm sure someone has brought up to you when Republicans tout out the Biden rule. What is your response to that?
The Biden rule, it was not the notion, Joe Biden's idea, that there comes a certain point during the presidential term when you don't have to confirm judges. The Biden rule was by no means justifying almost a year of delay. That is absurd. There had never been a time in the history of this country of that kind of delay. It essentially cut out a fourth year of a term that the president was elected to, that the Constitution clearly gives him the right to advice and consent, and that means the Senate has to act. So that was bogus argument. You know, I might have voted for Gorsuch on the merit. In other words, I certainly don't prefer him, but, you know, if he, you know, if I felt that he was going to be a fair judge and a qualified judge, I may have voted for him, but they stole the seat completely illegitimately, and that's where, again, I'm glad you used the word legitimacy. They've delegitimized the United States Supreme Court. That was a deciding vote for many important issues that so many of us care about. And we had won the Obama election fair and square. There's no question there in 2012. And yet the right was emboldened to destroy that idea of doing their job. The Senate didn't do their job unconstitutionally. And the longest period that had ever happened before was like 126 days for the man, Louis Brandeis, who became one of our greatest justices. This was almost 300 days. So it's incredible, and I don't know what they expect Democrats to do if they're ever in that position.
Well, here's my question.
We are heading down a bad road here.
I haven't heard a journalist ask Mitch McConnell, Senator McConnell, the question. So what you're saying in the fourth year of a Republican president, whether it be Donald Trump or Mike Pence, that if a opening happens, a justice leaves or passes away, I assume then you'll hold off. Right? And wait until the next presidential election. But nobody's asked him that. I'm just wondering, what do you think the chances are Mitch McConnell would wait?
Well, they would be, of course, do whatever they feel like because they don't believe in any rules anymore or any restraint. And, you know, the fact that they didn't respect the normal procedure with regard to the Supreme Court nominations of changing the rules instead is an indication of what they're willing to do. They're hell-bent on getting their way and being in power. And, yeah, what do they expect Democrats to do in that circumstance? I mean, I hope Democrats are not put in that position of having to make that judgment. But what do? Just let the Republicans have a third branch of government for time immemorial? That's what I mean by delegitimizing it. The court is already substantially compromising its legitimacy because this has happened. And it may only get worse as both parties feel like, well, this is what you got to do. And of course, 1 year won't be enough. What happens if it's 2 years? We're 2 years into the president's term. Why not make it 2 years? Or 3 years? You know, there's no limit.
Well, there were senators promising not to confirm without even seeing the nominees, any of Secretary Clinton's nominees on the court, right?
Well, one thing not to confirm them, that is a very serious issue. But this is not even considering what they did. They didn't even take up the nomination.
That's a whole different ballgame.
Go from outrageous partisanship to completely illegitimate behavior.
Let me ask you about another issue that legitaction.com deals with, and that is the Electoral College. I'm going to play this clip because you make reference to it in an article that ran in the LA, one of the LA papers. This is ABC correspondent Cokie Roberts.
Hyman, and I live in Covington, Louisiana, outside New Orleans. And I would like to ask Cokie, what will it take to get rid of the Electoral College?
I know Covington well. I'll tell you, the last time there was a big effort to get rid of the Electoral College was in 1969, when the House of Representatives actually did pass a resolution to abolish the Electoral College. It failed in the Senate. It was after very close elections of 1960 and 1968. One of the main proponents of getting rid of the Electoral College, and I've gone back and looked at the transcripts, was my father, Hale Boggs, who was majority whip at the time. I have to tell you, I think he was wrong.
You think the Electoral College should stay? It's okay.
I think that it has a very important role in terms of protecting minorities. The founders thought about small states. Keep in mind, they were always against the tyranny of the majority.
We're not talking about racial minorities here.
I'm talking about racial minorities here.
Okay.
So you look at the African American vote nationwide, it's 12%. But in certain states, it makes all the difference. And so, for instance, in Barack Obama's 2012 election. It was the African-American vote in Ohio, Pennsylvania, Michigan that put him over the top. The same with the Hispanic vote. Nationwide, it was 11%. But in Colorado, Nevada, it makes all the difference. And it's beginning to turn places like Arizona and Texas. So it has the effect of giving minority voices a much louder voice.
All right. Your reaction to that?
Well, Cokie may know Covington, Kentucky, but she sure doesn't know her constitutional history. So the last thing I should do, I would do, is ask Cokie about stuff like this. For somebody to assert that the Electoral College is good for minorities is frankly laughable. And, you know, when I heard this, yes, I was pretty outraged, because I'd just been doing a fair amount of looking at the Electoral College in its original form. Now, the Electoral College is not only flawed in its original form and had to be amended right away by the 12th Amendment because it didn't work properly. It was sort of thrown together at the last minute, and it was thrown together to protect the slave state. You know, apparently, Thomas Jefferson wouldn't even become president without the South having extra votes based on the three-fifths man rule, or the idea that they got more electoral votes based on slaves, even though obviously slaves were not allowed to vote. So this thing was flawed from the beginning. And now it has come to become a very distorted system, which, you know, frankly, I would have thought 20 years ago this never would have happened. But two out of the last three presidents have been elected for the first time, not by the plurality of voters. And this is something that I think makes people feel that the presidency is not legitimate from the point of view of you know, a 21st century democracy. So it's really an old, messy system that never made a lot of sense. And now it is creating a huge division in this country. And, you know, they have all these arguments that, well, you're going to ignore people in states, you know, say minorities in certain states that won't get attention if we change this. Well, that's absurd. I mean, what about all the people that live in New York or California who get very little attention during a presidential election? But also, you know, certainly this doesn't help people make attention to places like Wyoming, Montana, or Kansas, because those states are considered wrapped up the other way. Well, and so the reality is the Electoral College brings the attention to about 10 states, and the people, including the minorities in all those other states, aren't taken seriously in the campaigning.
Well, there are significant African American populations, not only in Alabama and Mississippi, but even states like Oklahoma. Oklahoma City has a large minority population. It seems like their votes are rendered useless.
Yeah. Cokie Roberts was completely off on this thing. And, it'd be better to ask people from those groups whether they think the Electoral College is good for them. I think they'd tell you they're nuts. It's gotten George Bush and Donald Trump in the White House. And that is not exactly the best thing for minorities.
Well, let me ask you about the argument, or one of the other consequences of the electoral system, in that, you know, every 10 years it's reapportioned because of population changes, and yet more people vote in, there's higher turnouts in states like Maine, Wisconsin, Minnesota, although Wisconsin wasn't as good this last time, than there are in some states that have more electoral votes. There's actually fewer people, there have been fewer people that have voted in Georgia than Wisconsin, but Georgia has significantly larger electoral population. How is that representative? You know what I mean? You know what I'm trying to get at there?
I'm not sure.
Okay, so Georgia has a higher electoral vote than Wisconsin.
Elector
vote.
Or members of the Electoral College.
Yeah, okay, but there's more electors in Georgia than there is Wisconsin, and yet it could very well be that more people vote in Wisconsin than Georgia.
Of course. Correct. Yeah. That's right. And, of course, one of the reasons is that there's this disenfranchisement of a lot of potential electors, that is, individuals, in Georgia, because you have this felony disenfranchisement. In other words, people who have committed a crime and are felons but have already served their time, they're in many places in the country, they are prohibited from ever voting again. So, for example, there's something like 1.3 million people in Florida in that status, and there's a big referendum effort that Legit Action is supporting to try to change that, to try to get it so that, you know, once you've served your time, at least, you should be able to vote again. So that can make, you know, in other words, those people are counted for purposes of how many electoral votes you get, right? Like, that's obviously what you're talking about. They're counted for that purpose, but they can't vote, and that doesn't make sense.
You know, there are many countries that always let people vote, whether they're incarcerated or not. Is the right to vote an absolute right?
I think it's an absolute right, and I realize that not everybody agrees with that. I do not understand what incarceration or being convicted of a crime has to do with your right to vote. You're still a citizen. And the only way you can, in my view, lose your right to vote is by doing something I also think is unconstitutional, which is by getting the death penalty. I think that people in prison should be able to vote. Why not? They've been sentenced to various punishments, but taking away one's citizenship is not one of those punishments. They're still citizens. And that's your right as a citizen to vote. So I think that makes no sense.
All right. We'll talk more with former U.S. Senator Russ Feingold, who has a brand new group. It's called LegitAction.com. LegitAction. We'll talk more with him about that in just a moment.
Hi there. My name is Ishmael Ozan, and many of you know me as the Dane County District Attorney, but I am also a husband and a father of two young girls. Today, I'm asking you to make the choice my wife and I made to not use physical punishment with our children. Many of us are not aware that over 16 years ago, the American Academy of Pediatrics urged doctors to recommend that parents not use physical punishment on their children. Today, over 100 years of research on children and families supports this recommendation. Look, well-meaning parents may use physical discipline intending to teach their children to make good choices, but we now know that physical discipline actually leads to more disobedience and aggressive behaviors in children. We all want what is best for our kids. Today, we now know what is best for kids is parenting based on respect, mutual understanding, and logic, rather than fear of physical pain. Please join me in learning more about positive parenting and creating a violence-free home.
Paid for by the Dane County District Attorney's Office with support from UW Health American Family Children's Hospital.
Former U.S. Senator Russ Feingold, nice enough to talk with us today, giving us a little update on what he's been doing with Legit Action. I think a lot of people just on a personal level, they feel like they know you because it's not a big state when it comes to meeting people, how you're doing, and whether you're enjoying some of the stuff you're working on.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little hard to use the word enjoy in light of what's happened to our country and the frightful display that's in the White House. But it is a good feeling to be able to focus with regard to the legitimacy issue on a number of issues that will be here long after Donald Trump is gone. And, you know, my personal view is Trump's not going to be around that much longer. I know that might be wishful thinking to some. But my sense is that one way or another, at a minimum, I don't think he's going to run again, or if he runs, I think he'd get beat. And I don't think he may even make it that long for a variety of reasons, whether he'll be removed under Article the 25th Amendment or impeachment. And that's why I want people to be ready, because if Mike Pence becomes president, all the things I'm talking about still will happen, because this stuff was the product of the far right long before they were basically forced to accept Trump. They didn't want him either. And so the attack on the right to vote, the gerrymandering, the felony disenfranchisement, the voter ID, that would continue. The campaign finance system, the need to overturn Citizens United, and all the efforts to try to require disclosure of contributions, that has to continue after Donald Trump. And then when it comes to, of course, getting rid of the Electoral College, maybe getting what's called the National Popular Vote Initiative in place, which could help overturn that without an exact constitutional amendment. And then, of course, doing something about this horrific stealing of the United States Supreme Court. These are all things that, frankly, I've been interested in throughout my career. And I do enjoy helping different efforts around the country. It's very exciting. For example, there's a lot of efforts going on, especially in Oregon and Connecticut right now, to try to pass this national popular vote initiative. The way that works is each state in the compact agrees that it will give its electoral votes to the person who gets the most votes nationally. So we are directly helping with rallies and lobbying legislators. I appeared in California at an event for the California Disclose Act. The Disclose Act is what we want at the national level, which is, you know, requiring a disclosure of these contributions. Right now, they can hide, these corporations can hide behind fake names, you know, the Better California Group, when it's really a big oil company thing. So being able to help efforts around the country like that is very stimulating, and particularly in the era of the Internet, you can do a ton very quickly, and people have already seen that Legit Action is one of the most reliable and fast groups in terms of jumping on issues. A great example is we were one of the very first, I think it was 6 o'clock in the morning, people that I've got working on this, when the president had this outrageous election commission thing. We were on that thing early in the morning and helped lead the outcry in The Guardian and in publications around the country, saying, you realize what this guy is doing with regard to trying to intimidate voters. I am enjoying this aspect of it, and these issues are very stimulating.
Let me ask you, you have kind of a provocative quote in one of the pieces you wrote. You said, Donald Trump acts like an illegitimate president for a reason. You say, firing the director of the FBI, James Comey, demonstrates a whole new level of defiance of the rule of law and our foundational system of checks and balances. More bluntly, it proves just how dangerous an illegitimate president is to our democracy. His actions do not only undermine the legitimacy and credibility of his presidency, they are a direct threat to our constitutionalism and our democratic legitimacy. You wrote that before the Charlottesville situation. I thought what was interesting about your remarks is they kind of stuck in my head today as your former colleague from Tennessee, not a liberal by any stretch of the imagination, Bob Corker in his hometown of Chattanooga said this about the president.
The president has not yet been able to demonstrate the stability nor some of the competence that he needs to demonstrate in order to be successful. He also recently has not demonstrated that he understands the character of this nation.
The president does not understand the character of this nation or have the stability to lead and be successful. Those are profound remarks.
Without a doubt, yes. And Bob is no, you know, kind of guy that's just going to say, you know, anything or try to provoke people. He's a pretty measured guy. I mean, everybody knows what this is. Everybody knows that this president is like giving a three-year-old the keys to the family car. We all know that. I heard former Senator Gordon Humphrey of New Hampshire, Republican, the other day on the radio. I mean, he was terrific. I know he's not in the Senate now, but he just said, look, this man is delusional. He has to be removed from office. I mean, that's what the 25th Amendment is about. It's never been used, but it's time. It's time to say, look, a terrible mistake was made. We are in deep danger. Not only is it illegitimate, but he is completely reckless, and he does not know what he's talking about. He doesn't know the Constitution. He doesn't know the history of the country, and he doesn't know what he's doing.
So you agree and, with...
everybody knows that.
You agree with Congresswoman Gwen Moore from Milwaukee?
On what issue?
Well, she called for his impeachment earlier this week.
No, I of course agree with that, but you know I'm hoping it gets a little out there among Republicans. It's time for them to start talking about this because he simply has to go.
All right.
And but the thing I want to emphasize is this legitimacy thing is not just about Donald Trump. The far right is delegitimizing our government as well, and they will continue to. And one of the things I worry about is when we get Trump out of there, they're going to say, oh, good. At least we get, or people are going to say, oh, good. At least we got him out of there. And then all this stuff will continue, and people will be so relieved that Trump is gone that they're going to let them continue. So we have to be ready to fight all the battles here, not just Trump, although, good God, he couldn't be any worse.
I've read some of the details of how the Wisconsin Republicans gerrymandered the map, and it was the first time in a very long time one-party rule dictated how the maps would be drawn. And you're very familiar with Wisconsin legislative boundaries. You were in the middle of that when you were first elected. But when I read some of the comments, you know, when some of the information came out, Senator Leah Vukmir essentially picking her voters. No, I don't want that part of Milwaukee. No. Let's move a little over. Let's move over to Waukesha County. Should people be able to pick their voters?
Well, you see, that's always been done to a degree. In fact, one of my favorite anecdotes from my time in the state legislature is they'd been fighting back and forth so much about people picking one part of Green Bay area and another. They finally announced the plan in the state assembly, and everybody started screaming, "Where's De Pere?" De Pere was gone.
They forgot De Pere.
But you know, that's one thing, and of course that's politics. And we probably should move to an independent commission like they have, I think, in Iowa and other places. But what this Supreme Court case, Gill versus Whitford, is about, and yes, the Wisconsin case is going before the United States Supreme Court. Justice Kennedy will be the deciding vote. But what they're going after is a much more sinister thing. It's called packing and cracking. Packing is packing many Democrats into a single district. So you waste every Democratic vote, you know, jamming Kenosha and Racine, the cities, into the same state senate. Democratic voters across districts in which Republicans have small majorities is another way of wasting all the Democratic votes. So, you know, this is a new ground or basis for a challenge. It's not based on race per se. It's based on these practices, and, you know, the court has accepted the case.
You know what I found shocking is when they drew this map, they had projections on what would happen in these districts, and my God, Russ, they were dead on.
They knew what they were doing.
They knew exactly what they were doing. It's scary. So how do you get rid of gerrymandering nationwide?
Well, that's what this is. This lawsuit would establish a constitutional standard to not allow this practice, and it would be a huge step forward. You know, there was gerrymandering in this country for forever, but particularly in the South. And it wasn't until the early 60s where in the United States Supreme Court in Baker versus Carr and Reynolds versus Sims, the court said, hey, you can't do it on this race basis. And, you know, that worked for a long time with regard to race, and it continues to be the law, but now they're finding another technique. A Supreme Court ruling, which we got a good shot at getting, would give the foundation for challenging this kind of thing wherever it would be done, whether it be done, you know, at the state level, at the federal level, because it's based on constitutional right. It's not based on state law.
So maybe I should have asked my question with this caveat. Wisconsin went as far as you possibly could push the limits on partisan gerrymandering and packing the votes. But there's other states that have done maybe things that are egregious, we know, along racial lines. Will this case solve all the problems with gerrymandering? I guess maybe that's the question.
No, but I think what it can do is begin that line of challenges. You know, like, for example, when it came to the death penalty, which, you know, was ultimately struck down, it came back. But, you know, it began, for example, with saying, hey, you can't execute somebody who's mentally ill, or you can't execute a minor. You know, in other words, one step at a time. Getting rid of this practice would be a great precedent for people doing the work which brilliant people are doing across the country, documenting other practices that have this kind of effect. So instead of looking at it as okay, we got that one thing, but that's it, I think it can create a momentum for a line of cases. Unless, of course, we allow the Supreme Court to continue to be compromised by the right, then we won't get anywhere. Justice Kennedy is not going to be around that much longer.
Let me ask you finally about Citizens United. You called the other day for that to be overturned again. There is some disagreement how to overturn it, whether it be by a constitutional amendment or whether it be by a change in the Supreme Court. What are your views on that now?
Well, of course, I was really hoping and believed it would be quickly overturned by the Supreme Court had Hillary Clinton been elected or if Merrick Garland had been allowed to be on the Supreme Court. We still need to overturn it. I think the advocacy for constitutional amendment really helps organize people and fire up people about the issue, but it's not terribly realistic to think we'd get a constitutional amendment. So I think what we should do is advocate all of the above, but at the same time push very hard for disclosure of contributions, laws requiring disclosure of contributions at the state and federal level, because it's that kind of information that allows people to really know what's going on and creates the political momentum to force people to do something about this. This is what John McCain and I were able to do. It took us 8 years, but we kept finding different shameful and embarrassing things that members of Congress were doing with regard to campaigns and soft money. And we were able ultimately to force senators and congressmen who did not want to change the system, we were able to force them through public pressure to do it. And, you know, I just spoke the other day at the Ashland Bayfield League of Women Voters, packed crowd on an afternoon on a Wednesday, a beautiful day up there in Lake Superior, packed crowd wanting to hear exactly about the different ways that we can affect this issue. And they are organizing nationally, as the League of Women Voters has done in the past, to try to do this. They were instrumental in our success in passing McCain-Feingold as well.
Final question. You know I'm a big union supporter. Are the laws that have been manipulated over the last 30 years going after union representation for workers and the ability to organize, is that a threat to democracy?
Oh, I think so. Look, of course, unions were formed first and foremost to protect the economic security of people. But this solidarity and the idea of people bonding together to act in a way that is consistent with their needs and their wishes and their aspirations has to do with voting as well. It has to do with the right of people to organize and to be to help each other against the powerful interests. And, you know, the vote is just as important as the pay raise or the health care benefit. And so, yes, I do think that this is devastating. And, of course, that's part of why they go after unions. They don't necessarily have a huge problem with union people making a little more money, but they sure hate it that they have political clout and they want to take it away.
Former U.S. Senator Russ Feingold, Legit Action. Please sign up. It's a good way to stay informed on the stuff that Russ is working on with his group, and we look forward to chatting to you again real soon.
Thank you. It was great. Good talking to you.
All right, stay on the line for just a sec. This is Sly for SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
SlysOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
You know, we work hard every day, in mills and mines, hospitals and schools, in office buildings, pharmacies and shipyards, factories and forests, in squad cars, ambulances and taxicabs. We do all kinds of jobs in Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, and all across the United States and Canada. We build the things that build our country. We do things that keep our country going, support our families and our communities. We have the courage to stand up even when no one else does. We have the strength to fight for what's right, for our families and for yours. We're your friends, your neighbors, your sisters and brothers. We're more than 1 million members strong. We stand in solidarity with workers in every continent on the globe. We're the United Steelworkers Union, and every day we fight for you. Please join our fight. Visit usw.org or like us at facebook.com/steelworkers.